But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell. And I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. I almost forgot what you did there for a second.
If I'm lucky, I'll pronounce your name right.
That's it. Listen, I'm listening to you with rapt attention.
So this week, my mind goes to weather forecasters, meteorologists.
Really?
Because thank God my meteorologist is not my surgeon.
Oh, yeah, well, 50-50 shot, you know, and, you know, it doesn't matter what they call, they still retain their jobs,
but,
right?
But sometimes they can be so accurate, because I'll never, ever, ever forget 2 years ago at the Jones Beach Air Show,
right,
sitting in Command Central, which is like right in the middle of the boardwalk by the concession area. New York State's all set up there. They have the announcers on a double-decker stand.
Yeah.
I'm down below. And they had somebody from the Weather Channel there. And it was a beautiful day. They're busy looking at the patterns or whatever they look on the computer.
Yeah.
And they started panicking. They went to the powers that be and said,
cancel the show.
We got to get out of here within an hour.
Really?
Bad stuff is coming.
Huh.
And you go, what, are they crazy? And sure enough, you know, it literally changed on the dime.
Yeah.
And it went from being a beautiful day to a thunderstorm.
Yeah.
So that's intense in a good way.
Yeah.
However, what's been going on here is absolutely crazy. You know, it's going to start coming down on Thursday night at 2 in the morning. It's going to be a terrible morning rush hour.
Yeah.
And then I panic because I actually been using a driveway for two cars, so my son and I are always jockeying around, so I hate to be in first and then have to move in the morning. So I left my car in the street, woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning going, oh, Mom! You know.
You know what's great about that? Who's ever in second has to shovel. They got to get out first.
My son is a believer in the Lord above, because he wakes up in the morning. You know, for him, early morning is probably 10:30.
Yeah.
But when he wakes up in the morning, there's a path outside his door to the car.
Nice.
The car is pristine. There's no snow on it. So he's a believer.
Yeah, yeah. He must have lives with Dad, right?
But, so I run out to put the car in the driveway so I don't have the issues with the plow, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I wake up at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning and turn on News 12. And they're busy telling me, you know, maybe not so much.
You know, it's funny about newscasters. One of the scariest things I ever saw in my life was a newscaster, a weather forecaster. I think it was on Channel 4 or something. And when he was done with the forecast, they had icons on the TV of what you should wear, like a hat, a scarf, mittens, you know. And I'm thinking, God, if it wasn't for them, I'd have gone out without a coat on. You know, it's amazing how dumb that the elites think everybody is. It's pretty funny. And I also, you know what else I think, Stu? I think that instead of Doppler radar and all that, they should just cut a bay window in and take a look every once in a while. And they'd probably be just as accurate. Save yourself a lot of money.
Well, that's funny, too, because there's a little behind the scenes on the weekends here at the radio station. They pre-record. So they have to be pretty sensitive to what the weather's going to be, but it's a guesstimate.
Sure, of course.
Because, but I remember in the old days, we actually had weekend staff. But, you know, the powers that to be were, like, you know, very well thought out. And I'll give you two examples how it's well thought out. One is in this scenario, the on-air people were in the middle of the building with no access to windows.
Right.
So, you know, they'd be telling it's, you know, beautiful and sunny, and they'd be flurrying outside.
Got a bay window in.
But also the geniuses that design things. So I'm not much of an engineer or a design person, but we have, like, very important equipment. And it's in the control room, we call it.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And the control room, if you look up at the ceiling, is all stained with watermarks and whatever. You know, so the geniuses that designed this place, they put the control room right below a condensate line that ended up always dripping.
Of course, yeah, that's what they do. That's why they have them there, you know. Yeah, it's amazing. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to turn this weather thing into a food conversation. And I'm thinking, well, if it rains, it rains on the crops, and the crops grow, and then we take the crops, we harvest them, bring them into the kitchen, and fix them up, you know?
But we can turn this into a food.
You know, no, wait a minute. Before we do that, you know what I realized the other morning? I walked out of the house, right? And it was like, I don't know, 22 degrees or something. It was really cold. And I said to myself, wow, we finally conquered global warming. Greta Thunberg can go back to high school, you know? I mean, call off the... All the maniacs, you know, it's no longer global warming.
Well, when you talk about the weather, just again, before we take a detour and talk about food, but this cold weather, it was like 22 degrees or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's here. And then I was watching the football game, I guess, last weekend, Kansas City, Miami.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like -7 degrees, but then with the wind chill, it was like 22 below. It was, ridiculous. And you got to think about it. I mean, you know, in the old days when you're playing on grass, there's a little bit of a cushion. I guess there's a lot of controversy about turf fields or whatever.
Yeah.
But that must be like going down on cement.
Oh, yeah, it totally is, you know. The other thing, too, you know, you get to a point. I had a friend who lived in Sharon Springs upstate. I guess it's about an hour west of Albany or whatever. And he lived kind of on a, it wasn't a mountain, it was like a hill. He lived up. He was up, you know, whatever it was. And I got up there one. I used to go up and watch the Super Bowl with him. He was a dear friend of mine, and you know, one of my best friends forever. And so he moved away. He goes up there, and I go up and visit him. And in the summer, we play golf. And you know, and you had two seasons up there. You had winter and get ready for winter. You know, that's really pretty much it, what you had. But there was this window of about 7-8 weeks where it was summer up there. It was beautiful, you know, trees and the hills and the mountains and stuff. But in the winter, it was unreal. So I used to go up to watch the Super Bowl with him every year. And I got there one year. And it was, with the wind chill on the mountain where he lived, it was like 52 below.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And I said to him, I said, I have a question for you. What's the number where you go, you know what, it's just a little too chilly for me up here? I mean, is it, obviously it's not 52 below. So is it 61? Is it 78? 130? There's got to be a number where you go, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm going to Miami or whatever, you know. It's just, he had electric gloves. He had socks with heaters in them. I'm like, what are you doing, you know? Had bulldozers to move the snow around. Who would live here? You know, it's crazy.
Not my style.
No.
But just a funny story with this weather. So I get a call from Carrie on Thursday afternoon. She goes, did you see my text? I'm not good with text. I find it hard enough to keep up with emails.
Yeah, and you don't show up when you tell me you're coming.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah.
Don't give up on me.
All right.
So there's a picture of a raccoon outside her patio door.
Right.
The problem is I've always heard that raccoons in the daylight, there's issues. You want to stay away.
Yeah.
So she goes, I'm going out. I'm, you know, I'm going to put a garbage pail over it. I'm going to do something. She goes, the dog has to go out. He's at the window, like, attacking the thing, and the thing's just looking back, you know. Saying, I said, "Well, you know, let's examine the thing. It's probably not in its right mind. It's probably sick if I listen to what everybody says.
Well, can't sleep.
It's a little cold out there.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a little irritable. And the thing just wouldn't go away.
Yeah.
And then by mistake, Carrie's daughter let the dog out. And fortunately, he's not the type that would, you know, run out and
attack.
Like grab it and attack
it. Yeah.
That's the right terminology. So it's sort of set back a little bit and is like barking at it or whatever. And the thing's just like looking at him, you know, like, where do you want me to go?
I'm an insomniac.
Right. So then, again, Carrie was relentless. She was like, I'm getting rid of this thing. Meanwhile, I'm calling up like rescue places because I'm led to believe something. I sort of believe it.
Yeah.
So finally, she chased it like to the side of the yard, and she opened up the gate.
With like a broom or something? Did she have a weapon?
Practically. I was actually waiting to see if she had a shotgun,
but
because she always says no. But
yeah.
But at any rate, the thing finally ran out, and But she said at one point it was like in the bushes, and it just looked like a plant. You know, it was just like
yeah.
But no place to be out in the cold like that, though.
Well, I can turn this into a food conversation because I was building a restaurant in the late 80s in East Hampton. We had this old Victorian, I won't call it a mansion, but this huge home that was had been a restaurant called a Spring Close House. And my partner and I bought it when we were renovating it at the time. And there was no heat in the place. So we used to sleep upstairs. And there was, you know, rooms and like an apartment upstairs. We sleep upstairs in snorkel jackets and hats and stuff. You know, in the middle of the winter, we were redoing the restaurant. And so I had bought this loaf of sourdough bread, you know. It was still warm from the bakery. And I put it on the bar downstairs. And I went up to take a shower. And I come back down. And I'm like, did you eat the whole thing? And he goes, what? The bread. He says, what bread? I said, I just had a loaf of sourdough bread. I put it on the bar. It's gone. He said, I didn't touch it. Are you kidding me? So it turns out we had a raccoon in the place, and he was stealing whatever he could steal. He took the loaf of bread and did an end around and took it wherever he took it, right? So we go back for the weekend, and we're figuring out what to do with this thing. And so my partner says, well, I got these Havahart traps. Let's trap the thing, and we'll, you know, see if we can get him, and we'll turn him loose somewhere, right? So we were gone for about 3 or 4 days. We come back, and the raccoon is in the trap, and pissed off. I mean, you know, hissing and growling and, you know, trying to. And it's funny because, you know, they're very, you know, they have a lot of dexterity in their fingers and stuff. He was kind of trying to undo the thing. And it was, like, amazing to watch. And we get near him, and he's showing his teeth. He's wild, right? Like the Tasmanian devil, right? So we picked the thing up, and we figured we'd take him to a field somewhere 3 or 4 miles away and let him go. So we're two guys from up island. You know, we don't know anything about it. What do I know about raccoons, you know? Rocky and Bullwinkle is as close as I ever got, right? And so I get there, and I got this stick, right? And Marty's got the cage. And we got him in the middle of the field. I'm like, all right, Marty, if he comes near you, I'll get him with the stick, you know? So he opens the thing. I'm ready to bat this thing into submission, right? And the thing just looks at the two of us and trots off into the woods, right? I'm like, do you feel stupid? I feel kind of stupid here, standing here with a bat, you know? It's ridiculous.
No, and let's not turn this into a home warning about raccoons, but one of the girls in the office calls me up. She lives alone, and she always calls me with her issues. So she calls, there's a raccoon in front of my house, and it's looks like it's injured. And when I go near it, it starts growling and stuff, like you said. Yeah. So I call the police. They don't do anything. It's a Sunday, so there's no rescue people that we could find around. Finally, she finds somebody. They wanted like $200 to take care of the situation. She said, that's a bargain.
Not my raccoon.
But she calls it up. And it was funny. The woman pulls up in a station wagon. She has a trap. She goes up to the freaking thing, grabs it by the tail.
Really?
You know, things. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she just drops it into the cage, closes the door, puts it in the back of the cage, and you know, then whatever she has had a plan of action. If it's injured, she brings it to a vet.
Sure.
Try to help it. If not, they put it out. If it's
beyond
help. But it was funny because, you know, I'm afraid of it.
Yeah.
And this woman just grabs it. And
well, you know, they get, you know, you see these guys in India charming, you know, pythons or cobras or whatever they are out of baskets. You know, it's like some people just have that animal whisperer thing and they know how to do it, you know how to handle it. I'm not a grab a raccoon by the tail kind of guy, you know. I'm a grab a piece of like chicken cutlet when it comes in kind of guy. You know, it's easier. I told you I'd bring this back to food.
Thank goodness. So when I say bring it back to food, cold weather, hearty food, what are we talking about? And I could put my foot in my mouth because there's that.
You're not about to pronounce something, are you?
No, I'm going to describe it instead.
It's easy.
It's a winter stew that's sort of.
Cassoulet.
That's it.
Cassoulet, yeah. Well, that's, I love cassoulet. But nobody makes it anymore. It's an old French dish, you know. They used to use goose years ago in France. Now it's duck, you know, and there's not a lot of goose being sold. And you would think there would be more with the geese, you know, problem we have.
There was a famous German restaurant, like 14th Street in Manhattan.
Luchow.
Luchow's.
Yeah.
And they used to have I don't know how my mom was sophisticated with food, and I'll call it sophisticated because not everybody has goose and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they used to take us there in the fall winter for goose.
Well, listen, if you get a hankering for goose, you know, you get a hankering for goose, you gotta go. it's funny. I don't see much goose around anymore. I mean, I have all these purveyors or whatever that I deal with. So it's basically duck. It's duck, sausage, and beans is really what cassoulet is. And it's hearty as hell. I mean, it takes a while to make it.
And is it like a white type of
Well, it's not like stew like you would think about stew, where it's gravy and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because I guess my mind was wandering towards like dumplings
not, yeah,
and white sauce.
It's not very liquidy, I mean, it doesn't have a lot of liquid. It's kind of like, thick, with the beans and all of that. But it's basically beans, pork, sausage of some kind, bacon, and duck, And the duck is usually confit, it's the duck is salted, washed, and then poached slowly in its own fat for, I usually do 24 hours overnight, very slowly.
And is it usually skinned or it's...
Yeah, the skin on it, you kind of sear it afterwards because the skin is kind of like... I tend to pull the meat. I don't usually use the skin. If I do, I do it separately. I'll fry it and use it as a garnish or whatever. But then, you got to soak the beans. It's a big process, and you cook the sausage and then you put it all together at the end and bake it. But, the other thing you have to remember about cold weather food, I think of braises and... things that are cooked low and slow, short ribs, beef stew, that kind of thing, shepherd's pie. That's all that comforty, when it's cold out kind of food. And for some reason, when it's cold out, you can survive the heavier dishes. Like, in the summer, it's, beef stew is beef stew. It tastes the same in the summer as it does in the winter. But there's something about summer where you don't have clothes on, as much, your bathing suit, you don't want to be fat if you can help it. Or overweight, I should say, and it's a winter kind of thing. I made a braised pork butt last week, which is really good. I mean, it probably has even a little more flavor than braised short rib, the beef. Just nice, and the great part about pork butt and pork butt and pork shoulder are the same thing. I don't know why they call them two different things, but it's the same thing, and. It's probably about a third of the price of short ribs. So, if you're looking for something that's, economic or economically, sound for dinner, pork butt's the way to go. And, generally you have to either roast it and then slice it thin or I braise it. I braise it with a lot of tomato product, onions, garlic, some thyme, rosemary, all those winter herbs. And it's just a fabulous dish, and you can use it. The great part about a braised pork butt, I usually cut it in half horizontally, so it cooks quicker because it's kind of thick. But once you do that and you cook it, you can put it into portions. You can make like 3, 4, 5, 6 ounce portions, whatever you want, and then reheat it, or just take it and serve it whole and cut it up as you're serving it. And the bottom line is, if you have it left over, the great part about it is that the meat will kind of shred. Because it's really soft, and you can shred that meat in the sauce and serve it over a pasta, so you have a second day dish. It's really kind of one of the more versatile, I think, food items out there, and just so good, so tasty, and the tomato product is good, and it lends itself to, being served over something like rice or, like I said before, over a pasta. I like to kind of break it up. And serve it over, gnocchi or a soft pasta like that, which is always kind of fun. So I would take a shot at that if you're home and you got a couple of hours and you want to kill it and have some delicious food afterwards and maybe even the day after that. Pork butt's the way to go. It's and again, it's like I think I pay about $3 a pound for it, so it's probably $5 maybe in the store, which is economical these days. And the other thing about winter is all the foodstuffs go up in the winter, or most of them do, except for like beef. Beef kind of comes down after the holidays, but tomatoes. I'm looking at I get these alerts on my phone from the vegetable companies that I deal with, and they'll tell me that, you know, due to cold weather, the Mexican tomato crop is down, or due to cold weather, the grapes from Argentina or Chile aren't, you know, what they should be, and, you know, prices are up. So, you know, you kind of, you know, from a standpoint of shopping for a family, it's good to know these things, you know, because sometimes I think people tend to just grab things off the shelves. But if you, you know, if you're a smart shopper and you want to keep your food costs down, I mean, I have to do that all the time in restaurants in order to survive. So if you want to keep your food costs down, pay attention to that a little bit. You know, you can probably go on the internet and find out, I would think that information is on the internet. And then take a look and see, and maybe what you can do is you can tailor your menus around new items that you ordinarily maybe wouldn't, you know, try out, maybe sunchokes or artichokes or things like that, you know, are in season that you generally don't play with, and maybe you can expand your repertoire that way. So listen, Stu, I went to a new restaurant the other night up in Oyster Bay, and Oyster Bay is becoming quite the little hamlet for food and wine now. You know, you have all kinds of, you know, you have Two Spring over there, which is a nice little restaurant, and you have a burger place, Smash Burger. You got Tabby's, which sells great burgers. It's kind of like a dinery kind of menu. You have the Wine Line that just opened, wine bar there. You got Teddy's, which is kind of like a gastropub. And anyway, they just opened this new place called Gioia. It's G-I-O-I-A, I believe. In Italian, that means joy. So, you know, it's an Italian restaurant along the lines of the kind that I would love to go to. And when I saw the menu, I was kind of excited. It's the same people that own Two Spring. So there's a talent in the kitchen for sure. And what they did was they have they took a very small space over that was I believe a Peruvian restaurant at one time, and before that it was like a sort of an Asian place. And they have a little area in the front where they're making fresh pasta in the window, you know, like you see sometimes in the city or in Italy. And they have a Burkel slicer there where they do, you know, slicing prosciutto and salumi, mortadella, that kind of thing. But their menu is interesting because I think what I see there is like sort of a restaurant like you would see in Italy, and it's not your typical Long Island Italian. You know, we all know the menu, scallopini of veal and chicken francese and all of that stuff and livernaise, there's nothing wrong with that, but excuse me, this is different. This has about, I would think, 10, 12, maybe 14 appetizers, a lot of them vegetable-based, which is kind of cool. I mean, they had a grilled cauliflower, they had a green bean thing, they had a eggplant thing, they had a cheese thing, a prosciutto thing with mozzarella, which is kind of, you know, sort of a nod to, you know, Italian favorites. And then they had an area where they had about maybe seven, eight or nine pastas, and no real entrees. The only entrees were by the day. They had specials of the day. I think I went there on a Tuesday. I think the special was roasted lobster, and then they have so they have a different dish on each day, Sunday through Saturday, and food was very good. You know, the wine list is really well thought out. It's not huge, but it ticks all the boxes as far as I'm concerned. I think it's one of the better Italian wine lists that I've seen in a long time, and they didn't have you know, all the, what I liked about it, they didn't have all the usual suspects. You know, the Ducale Reserva, Gold Label, and all, you know, Santa Margherita, and all the wines that everybody seems to want to gravitate to for some reason. So they had an interesting list. They had I had a Timoroso, which is a old ancient grape from, I believe it was from up north, in Piedmont, but really good minerality, great flavors in it. They had a Kerner there, they had a Silvaner there, as far as the whites went, you know, Pinot Bianco. They had the requisite Pinot Grigios, but they had a couple of good producers, which was nice. And then they had a Falanghina, I think they had a Gavi de Gavi, they had, Etna Bianco, which was Cattarato, a grape out of Sicily. And the reds were real good, too. They were all well thought out. It was really a great experience. I had a ball. It's the kind of place that I would go to again and again and again. And you know, so I think, you know, Oyster Bay is really become kind of a destination town, you know, for food and wine these days. They have some really nice little restaurants going on up there in every price category. And the good part about Joya is that it's not really all that expensive. I mean, your apps run between 12 and 20 bucks, which is normal. Your pastas are between 22 and 30, I guess, something like that. And then, you know, lobster, I think lobster was $68, but lobster's kind of expensive. So, you know, the entrees can get a little pricier. But the bottom line is if you go there, have an app, an entree, and a dessert, if you don't have a bottle of wine, I mean, I always manage to come out with a bill somewhere north of $500, no matter what the bill is. It's just what I do, Stu.
So you said one of the items on the menu was roasted lobster.
Yeah, yeah.
So in working with you over the years, it's usually steamed or boiled.
Yeah, I tend to like them steamed myself, but there's nothing wrong with roasting it. I mean, as long as you're not drying it out, it's fine.
So that's interesting because growing up, I guess I was pretty lucky. My parents were definitely very much credited with giving me the opportunity to try a lot of different foods.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's a gift.
I don't know if it was because it just happened to be in the hood, but there was a restaurant, I believe it was called South Shore Inn, that was sort of Rockville Center, Oceanside, on Sunrise Highway. And I don't know. You know, growing up as a kid, you know, you go into a seafood restaurant, you don't get a hamburger. But my parents were very nice, and somehow they introduced me to lobster. And growing up, it was a baked stuffed lobster, usually, which
that's the 60s, you know.
I guess is something that you sort of frown on.
Yeah, I just think that when you do, it's not, look, there's nothing wrong with any of that stuff. It's just not what I would do. I'm a purist. I like lobster for lobster's sake. You know, once you bake it and stuff it, in order to get that stuffing heated through, you're going to have to overcook the tail.
And that's where I was just going.
Yeah.
I said, usually 9 out of 10 times, the breadcrumbs on top, and I guess a creative chef would use more than breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's clams or something else mixed in there or whatever. But 9 out of 10 times, it would come out crispy, which would definitely indicate that the meat was
It's brown. It's stuck in a shell. It's, you know.
And take that forward. I'm a believer in advertising. Radio advertising, of course, is the best.
Imagine that.
But last week, being Martin Luther King weekend, so it was an extended weekend, and Jordan Lobster Farms over in Island Park was having a promotion.
Yeah.
I think it was 3 1-pound chicks for $39.
Right.
Which wasn't a bad deal. When you get down to it, you know, you just don't want the lobster. You want something else. So, you know, they have a great selection of food over there. So, you know, called mom when I got down there, you know, do we need some soup? Yeah.
Yeah.
Then this, you know, New England clam chowder, Manhattan clam chowder, there's lobster bisque.
Rhode Island clam chowder.
So then I had to go with, you know, a pint of bisque and a pint, she likes the Manhattan. And then we needed corn, you know, because it wasn't the dinner.
Yeah.
It
was,
you know, and I got some coleslaw because, again, it had to be like
of course, yeah.
You know, next thing I know, it's, you know, close to $100.
Yeah, that's how they get you.
But the truth was, it was really good.
Yeah.
You know, I went into that meal not being overly hungry. So the pound lobster was just perfect.
Just enough.
You know, and again, it was just done right. They had, I guess, had prepared it so you could just break it apart. I didn't need to use a cracker.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was great.
They cracked the claws for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, again, I'm the type that really gets into a lobster, and, you know, from the
sucking
tentacles.
On the little ones.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really great. And I just got a kick, you know, hanging out while they were preparing it over at Jordan's because they had so many different appealing options, you know.
Yeah.
They had like a small chilled lobster tail
that
you know, was like $8.99 or whatever, and I said, wow, you know, that might be a great meal during the week. But my before I could pull the trigger, which I my mind, I pulled back because I knew.
Well, you weren't that hungry. If you weren't that hungry.
I knew I wasn't going to get to it.
Yeah, yeah.
But that be said, I remember last summer or the summer before, there was like a mini lobster tail. I'm telling you, it was the size of a shrimp. I had to have that.
Of course. Yeah, that, you can snack on that while you're shopping. You
right, know? Right. So, but again, kudos to Jordan's. The people are so nice, the selection of food, and you know, and again, they had something. Their ad was also there's like a 2 pound Tuesdays or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But they also had, you know, like in the frozen section, they had like it looked like 16 ounce lobster tails. I mean, they were huge.
Yeah, size of your head.
And they also had. Lobsters that were pretty big, 5 pound lobsters and stuff.
Yeah.
So
that's a beast. You know, you're gonna have to have a pretty big pot for that. You know.
I'm sure. And again, you know, a 5 pound lobster is not usually something somebody has themselves. But that reminds me, there was a restaurant like in Manhattan, sort of near the Village, that had lobsters or whatever, and they had like every size.
Doma Docks?
No, this was I'll have to Google it and see if I can come up with it, but it was like on 2nd Avenue.
This is a long time ago. Are you going
this,
back
this in... is about 10-12 years ago. But
Lure Fish Bar.
No. But at any rate, that was the type of place that, you know, you got these huge lobsters.
Ed's
and
Lobster Bar.
No. And right, you would also, you know, it definitely would have baked stuff a lot. I remember when I first got divorced and I had my kids, you know, we were just looking for something fun to do. We happened to be in the city. Maybe we went to a Broadway show or whatever. Uh-huh. And we went to this place. And it's just incredible. You know, they got like all these lobster shells hung up, like, yeah. You know, in character, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So speaking of lobster, I got to go back to raccoons for a second.
Wow.
Now, Stu and I were talking off the air about some, what would you call it, paranormal experiences that we've had, you know?
Yes.
So I just opened up, you know, I'm a diet Snapple. For those of you who don't know, I'm a diet peach Snapple guy. It's my drug of choice in the morning. I don't drink coffee generally. Once in a while, I have a cup of coffee, especially when I come here because I need to run my mouth a little. But I'm a diet peach Snapple guy. And the good part about Snapple is not only does it quench your thirst, it educates you because there's all kinds of little tidbits on the inside of the cap. All right. So I open up the cap here 2 minutes ago, and it says a group of raccoons is called a gaze, G-A-Z-E. Now, what are the chances?
How freaky is that?
I'm telling you, we're surrounded by paranormal activity. Maybe I should tell them about my ghost story. Right?
Why not?
Oh, my God. That was the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. I did a dinner at Coe Hall in, I guess it's Oyster Bay. And it's on the Arboretum property. And so I was doing this dinner, and it was a wine dinner. It was different courses. It was like 7 courses or 8 courses with 8 corresponding wines. And I told the it was kind of an odd setup. It was they don't have an oven there. So I had to have everything on burners. They have one small little oven that I was able to warm things in. And it was a long counter with a sink in the middle, and I had the burners, 2 on each side of the sink. And behind me was a small counter to the right and 2 refrigerators. So I put some stuff. I had a bus box full of equipment that I put on the shelf behind me to the right. And then I had all the food in front of me. Right? So with each course, we were pouring a wine. And I said, make sure that I get a little bit of each wine. I want to check it out. Make sure it's not corked. And B, I want to have a sip of it. And C, I may finish it because I like wine. So what happened was they were backing up because I wasn't drinking them as I was doing the dinner. So I put the whites in the refrigerator with 3 whites, and they were pouring the reds or whatever. I'm going through the dinner, and it was a birthday party for somebody. We had these sparklers, these big sparklers that looked like a Roman candle that, you know, shoots a bunch of, you know, fire out and happy birthday. I said, make sure you put the sparklers over here with my equipment so I can find them later. Okay. So it's getting to be time, and I took out the white wines and I was tasting them, and the one I liked was the white Burgundy, so I put it on the end of the counter, right? And 5 minutes later, I go to take a sip of the white Burgundy, and the glass is gone. So I'm thinking, well, what did I do with it? Did I put it there? I thought I put it there. I'm not sure. Where did I put it? Where did I put it? I'm looking around the kitchen. I can't find it. So I get the waiter, Giovanni, and I said, Giovanni, did you take my wine? And he goes, no, I didn't take it. And I knew he wasn't pranking me because he's scared to death of me for some reason, right? And then I asked Betsy, the waitress, I said, Betsy, did you take my wine? No, I didn't take the wine, Jefe. I said, well, where the hell could it go, right? So I'm laughing because I can't find it. I said, I don't know, must have threw it away or whatever. So the curator was there from Go Hall, and I said, what do you got, a ghost in here or something? She goes, oh, don't go there. Don't go there, right? And I'm like, what? And she goes, just don't go there. And all right, whatever, right? So now it's time for the dessert, right? And the dessert was this chocolate hazelnut thing, right? So I had set it all up. I you know, portioned out the chocolate, the hazelnuts, and I saved 12 hazelnuts in a glass, and I put them on the end of the counter so I had these perfect hazelnuts to garnish the dish with, right? Okay, I got 12 of them up. Let's go. Give me the hazelnut. Where the hazelnut? Where'd it go? Where'd it go? Now the hazelnuts are gone, and the glass. Everything's gone, right? I'm like, this is like nuts. So now we can't find the sparklers for the cake. This is cake going out there, right? Where's the sparklers? I put them right here. We're looking all over the kitchen. Did we leave them in the car? Are they in the parking lot? Did they fall out of the bus box? Can't find them anywhere, right? So I don't know what to do. I said, do we have candles here or whatever? As we're doing this, I'm putting stuff away in the bus box. And under two pans and my knives are the sparklers, which were on the counter when we got there, right? And I called my daughter the next day. I said, you know, if somebody would have said this happened to them, I'd have the one eyebrow up and go, yeah, yeah, whatever, you know. I am a believer today. So there's some ghost up there in Coe Hall who basically likes white burgundy and hazelnuts, who's celebrating whatever he's celebrating because he's got a sparkler, a candle, the whole thing, you know. And it was, I know some of you out there are going, yeah, whatever. I'm telling you, I was there. They're gone. We never found them. We never found the nuts. We never found the wine. Thank God we found a sparkler and saved the day. But it wasn't where it was when we began it.
Wow. Yeah. So I did a little research, and the restaurant that I was thinking about was Francisco Centro Vasco.
I would have never gotten that.
Which I believe was on 23rd Street in Manhattan, but it was, I believe it's closed now, but it, I'm just a synopsis.
Because nobody can pronounce the name.
There you go.
I'd like to make a reservation at, what's the name of that thing again?
The third generation restaurant featured a menu of shrimp, clams, oysters, and mussels, but the lobsters were the go-to.
What was the name of it again?
Francisco Centro Vasco.
Centro Vasco.
And, you know, you again, you'd go there for lobster and for whatever reason, sangria. But it was 159 West 23rd Street in Manhattan.
Huh.
But it wasn't anything stylish. You know, it was very schlocky, if that's a word.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, just like lobster traps and lobsters dressed up as like Fred Astaire or whatever. You
I've
know,
never seen
it was like real shtick. But it was like my friend Allison, she like, you know, you got to go here when you go in the city. And again, it was the type of restaurant that people would be like, it was reasonably priced and like you might go crazy and get a 5-pound lobster and share it type
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and again, you know, a 5-pound lobster, the claw is the size of a human's hand.
That would have to come out dressed like meatloaf or something, right? I mean, you need a big one.
But it brings back good memories.
Kate
but again,
Smith.
It wasn't a gourmet restaurant. You know, it
didn't sound like it.
And this isn't an insult, but it sort of reminds me of a restaurant here on Long Island, Popeyes.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one in like Wantagh, Beth Hicksville,
Page, yeah.
And then there's one out in Deer Park.
Oh, right, Beth Page.
And, you know, seafood, again, not gourmet, but it's get your hands dirty. They
would have
all you can eat king crab legs one night, whatever. And I'll never forget, may you rest in peace, my friend Mike. Used to take him and his family there, and they were clients. And, you know, he could eat. He'd get a 3-pound lobster and then a filet mignon, you know, or a Chateaubriand or a porterhouse.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget, he just got so into that restaurant at one point. It was his wedding anniversary, and he took, like, 30 people there. And we had it was like the Last Supper because it was – a row of tables from one end of the restaurant to the other.
Yeah.
But, oh, my God, great memories. And, again, rest in peace, Mike, because that was always a pisser to go to there with you.
I've never eaten in Popeyes, but they have some rabid fans. I mean, I read about it occasionally, and people are always singing the praises and stuff. So maybe I'll get there one of these days. It's just it's not in my area where I'm generally at.
Yeah, no, it's just like it where south of Hicksville, north of Wantagh, where Wantagh Avenue and I think it's 106 comes together or whatever. Again, great restaurant. It's always packed, and they have these all you can eat nights, and it's definitely a heritage place here on Long Island.
Yeah, it's funny, you know. There's a big difference between a packed restaurant and a restaurant that's profitable. All you can eat gets people in there, but they're expensive. You know, those days are expensive.
Well, the prices aren't crazy. I mean, you know.
No, I'm talking about it's expensive for the owner.
No, yeah, no, but I'm getting it. Like King Crab is probably pretty expensive.
It's stupid expensive.
And in the day, and I'm probably talking at this point about 15 years ago, it was probably like, $29.95 all you can eat, but, you weren't supposed to bring a bag and put it.
Those are crab legs, There's a difference between king crab legs and crab legs. But, the king crab is, $40, $50 a pound. My cost, it's crazy.
Even in Costco, it's crazy price.
No, I mean, they buy obviously more than I do, but, it's something I don't use hardly ever. Just because it's not going to sell. It's just crazy expensive. But, when you look at those guys on the crab boats, I mean, if you've watched that, what's that called? The
Something Fish. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the crab boat show. What is that called? Anyway, there's a captain, supposedly looks just like me over there. Well, I look just like him, whatever. I don't want to insult him. But Deadliest Catch.
That's it.
Deadliest Catch.
I think that was the captain calling.
You see what those guys go through to try and get these crabs. It's like nuts. I remember years ago, I was always on the water as a kid. I had boats and stuff and always fishing and whatever. And I decided when I was about 17 that I was going to go to Alaska and hop on a fishing boat because they were paying these people $1,000 a day or whatever it was. And back then, I was making 12 bucks an hour or whatever, 10 bucks an hour or whatever it was. I said, yeah, it's for me. And then I read a weather report from Soundings Magazine about what was going on. And they said, yeah, it's a beautiful day up here on the Bering Sea. Waves are only like 12 feet and the wind's only blowing 30 miles an hour. It's gorgeous out. I'm thinking, 10-4, I'm out.
So when the local baymen are out there raking the floor of the bay, what are they harvesting? Is it oysters and clams and mussels?
They can fish for oysters that way, but most of the oysters are harvested commercially, you have Flowers over here in Oyster Bay. He's got the big boat and churns up everything. You have growers for oysters. You just grow them and, go out there harvest them.
But for clamming.
Clam's different.
I gotcha. I have a cousin, Billy, and, we go to the house for barbecues, this, that, and the other. Yeah. And I'm always intrigued by, he's a fireman up in Connecticut. And when he's not doing that, he's in the bay harvesting clams, and I'm talking, I go like, where do you go? And he goes, yeah, it's a beautiful day out there,
not telling you.
He'll never tell me it is. No, that's like proprietary.
Yeah, well, when my parents, I don't know what's going on here, I got this thing in my throat. My parents moved to Babylon from Carr Place in 1973 when my brother graduated high school. And I guess between me and my brother, they didn't want to put the rest of the family.
Is your sister there now?
Huh?
Is your sister in Babylon?
No, she's in Bayshore.
Bayshore, yes. Because I remember when your mom passed, you had
the funeral there, yeah. Anyway, what was I saying?
You were talking
about... when they moved to Babylon, I had my boat, I put it in there, they were on a canal, so I put the boat in the backyard, in the canal. And I would go out there, and there were literally hundreds and hundreds of clammers out there in the bay. They had these garveys, these flat boats that they would stand in the front and, work the rakes or the tongs or whatever. And we supplied 90% of the clams for the entire country. out of the Great South Bay. You could literally walk across the bay on the Garveys. The Garveys with that flat boat, that's what they call them. And now you don't see any out there, maybe one or two. And I don't know if that's because clams are being harvested differently or whatever, but it would seem to me that, yeah, okay, so let's say you fished the bay out, you know, and, you know, the crop was getting smaller and smaller. You know, I haven't seen Garveys out there in the last 20 years, so it had to come back, I would think, you know. But I don't know where they're getting the clams from now because, you know, the stuff that I get, usually they have tags on them, you know, and tell you where they're from. And most of the stuff I get is from, like, Rhode Island, Massachusetts area. But it's a shame because, you know, there's still some clammers on the North Shore, like in in Bayville, Oyster Bay area. But that's harder to get clams because the water's deeper up there. You know, the bays are shallow. So even in high tide, you know, you go on the flats and you could harvest these clams. And, you know, they would get 2, 3, 4 bushels a day each boat. So I guess there were just millions and millions of clams that were being harvested. And not anymore. And it's a shame because, you know, a lot of people made their living, you know, on the bay. You know,
well, it's funny. I just saw Billy Joel recently, and he has a song, Downeaster Alexa.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lyrics go like, while I'm on the Downeaster Alexa and I'm cruising through Block Island Sound, I have charted a course to the vineyard, but tonight I am Nantucket bound. We took on diesel back in Montauk yesterday, left this morning from the Bell in Gardner's Bay. Like all the locals here, I've had to sell my home. Too proud to leave, I work my fingers to the bone.
Yeah, yeah, he's a big proponent of Bayman and that
and
culture.
An Oyster Bay person.
Yeah, yeah. But that culture is dying. I mean, I was around that. I lived in East Hampton for a long time. And, you know, all those Baymen, the locals out there, you know, they were being, you know, regulated out of a livelihood, which was terrible, you know. And who respects, you know, the fishing in the bay more than the baymen, you know? I mean, you know, you got a guy in Washington in a suit, you know, telling the guy who's on the bay every day what to do and how to, you know, conserve this, that, and the other thing. I mean, they should be down there telling the guy in a suit what to do, you know? It's really amazing to me how when government gets involved in things, it gets totally screwed up for the most part. I mean, I'm sure they do some good stuff here and there, but they get their nose involved in stuff that they know nothing about, and rather than consult somebody who does, they just, you know, blather on and do what they do. But, you know, the baymen that I know were way more concerned about conservation than anybody in Washington because it's their livelihood. They want to fish around next year. You know, they're not the ones that were depleting the stocks. I mean, you had these boats offshore. You know, I don't know if you know about the H.A. buoy, but the H.A. buoy is 12 miles offshore. And beyond that is international waters. So you couldn't fish if you were a commercial boat from, let's say, Russia or, you know, Japan or whatever. You couldn't come over in that 12-mile limit. I think they've since extended it to 200 miles, if I'm not mistaken. But I remember taking my boat offshore, and we get close to the H.A. buoy. And I remember looking out there one night. It was still dark out when I got there. And it looked like a city that was offshore. And it was all boats. It was all these huge commercial fishing boats from other countries that were just, you know, taking everything that swam. And they had commercial canning facilities on board, freezing facilities on board. It was just nuts, you know, these 100-foot trawlers or whatever. And so finally, I think they extended the 12-mile to 200 miles. But that's where all the problems were. It wasn't with the bay guys. You know, the bay guys are taking, you know, 25, 35 bluefish a day or whatever the hell it was. And these guys are offshore with these nets, you know, taking everything that swam. So, you know, conservation works for sure, but it has to be, you know, has to be thought out. And I think the baymen were much more qualified to talk about conservation than, you know, lawyers in D.C.
Well, I know in Oyster Bay now, haven't they, with the Cornell Cooperative, done some stuff about seeding the farms
yeah,
or whatever?
Oysters, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, look. The people that are, you know, who knows better about farming than farmers? Do they ever ask the farmers? No, they don't. Who knows more about conservation of fish than fishermen? Do they ask the fishermen? No, they don't. Did you ever meet a lawyer that think he was the smartest guy in the room? It's just what they do. They argue and they pontificate, you know. And you got 500 of them down there running the world. How's that going? You know, it's like bizarre, right? Why wouldn't you ask the people who are there on you know, on the ground and working it. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Anyway, you been to any good places lately?
I'm trying to think.
That sounds like
we had this conversation before we came on air. I guess it's how people's tastes change. I remember growing up, I was never a coffee guy. I guess went to college, then all of a sudden you do whatever you got to do to stay up or whatever.
You ran out of methamphetamine.
Yeah. But in recent times, I'm not a big coffee creamer guy, you know, with the different flavors or whatever. And I'm a simpleton. I'm not a Starbucks guy. If I go to Starbucks, I find that, you know, whatever you order, it's all about the syrup or whatever. Then, you know.
And the sizes. How do you figure out the sizes?
I'm
you
like,
want a Venmo or a Vento or a Primo?
I am so embarrassed when I go to.
Yeah, I have a medium.
That's what I say.
I know. Like,
but, you know, to me, I very content going to 7-Eleven and making my own coffee and whatever. But again, I'm not a half and half guy.
Yeah.
And then last night I was at a dinner and I was like, needed something to just perk me up. And my buddy goes, can I get you a cup of coffee? But you can't come with me to get it. And I'm very particular. I don't like things too hot, you know, not like that soup theory that we have.
Yeah.
So I'm if I get coffee, it's coffee with milk, no sugar, very light.
Yeah, yeah.
So he goes, there's no milk, but put some half and half in there. And I said, oh, here we go. But sure enough, he brought it out, and it's like, it hit the spot. And, you know, so much so that this morning I experimented again. And so tastes change over the years. I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think as you mature, I think your tastes change too, thank God, because, you know, as a kid, you know, your eating habits are usually based on your parents, you know.
And I know you're sitting here, like, very concerned that I haven't, like, put my foot in my mouth much today. But I'm going to try.
No, I'm very happy.
But I'm going to try.
All right.
So
I'm
intrigued by, I'm going to try to say this right, Manchego cheese?
Oh, geez. Well, you were close. Manchego.
Manchego.
Yeah.
So what's the deal with that? It's got, like, an interesting, I don't know if it's wax around
it.
Yeah,
it's black wax.
But people
it's got
eat
this chevron kind of
yeah. So design. It's got like a black and orange almost look. But and apparently it's digestible because everybody eats it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it seems to be a faddish type cheese. Am I correct at the moment?
I don't know faddish. It's popular for sure. Manchego is a goat's milk cheese from Spain. It's kind of on a mild side. It's not real assertive. Like real assertive would be feta. You know,
but I've been like blind to it. Yet, I guess back in the spring, went to Encime, the wine bar in Oceanside with Massimo.
Yeah, good guy.
And we got some cheese boards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say the rest of that word or whatever. But and that was on there, and it was intriguing. And again, in today's world, it seems everybody's going with honey drizzled on cheese and stuff, or like a fig jam.
Yeah.
So I saw it there, and then all of a sudden my eyes opened to like anywhere I go that there's like a cocktail party or something, it's there. And then even I was in Roslyn area in Greenvale, and I was in the Stop and Shop there, and I was hungry. I was just looking for something to nosh on, and I thought maybe I get some cheese or whatever, because again, you always intrigue me. You know, what a better snack than a baguette and some cheese or whatever.
It's the best.
You know, I like a crunchy but not stale bread or whatever.
Yeah.
So I went to the cheese area, and for whatever reason in Greenvale, I guess it's a kind of affluent part of Long Island, the Gold Coast or whatever.
Roslyn area, yeah.
But they had some Manchego in like blocks of cheese, but they also had sliced. Which for me is the perfect thing.
Sure.
It's funny that I went to my local Stop and Shop. I guess we're not so gourmet where I am.
Well, you're on the South Shore.
And they didn't have the slice version of it.
You guys,
but
it,
again, it's just interesting to me that, you know, all of a sudden it's visible to me.
Yeah,
probably was there all the time.
Yeah, it was.
You know, on all these boards and everything, but I didn't see it.
Well, you know, a lot more, I think people are a lot more aware of cheese. I mean, you look at like a lot of Italian restaurants now will have the salumi and cheese thing. You have some wine bars opening up. So I think cheese is hot now, you know.
But, you know, as a kid, you talk about what's available. I mean, you know, you had Bondel and Baby Bondel. Or
yeah.
You had Borzan.
Borzan. That's Borzan? Not cheese. That's a spread.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, today, forget about it. I mean,
well, you know, they were always around. I mean, I remember my grandmother, and again, she was my great grandmother from Switzerland, right? So she used to eat this Liederkranz cheese, and Limburger, which stunk to high heaven. I mean, you know, it smelled like a locker room. You know, it was awful. You know, and she would say, "Would you like some?" Yeah, like I want an enema. Are you kidding me?
There's I don't know. No way. For some reason, that takes me to again some of the. Some of our listeners love when I talk about Carrie, but
especially like, Louise.
Yeah, there you go. You called her out.
Yeah,
she'll be happy. But she'll go for like this is like an antique liverwurst.
Yeah, well, it's an old.
So she'll take like liverwurst with some horseradish cheese, and like on white bread, and probably because I'm not a mayonnaise guy, but I think she might put mayonnaise on it. But to her, that's like. Wow.
Yeah, one of my first girlfriends, Lisa Amwacker, she used to eat liverwurst with mayonnaise. I couldn't get it. You'd have to have mustard on that, you know? But it is what it is, you know? You know, when you look at even you know, like the Belgians, French fries, the frites with mayonnaise, you know? Do you ever think eating mayonnaise with potatoes?
No.
It's actually pretty good.
See, now you had to do it. You had to sting me, because that made me think of kingfish.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I thought one of the coolest things was be going, you know, out for a nice dinner. And you're ordering cod. What was it? You had something wrapped in newspaper. Fish and chips.
Yeah, fish and chips, yeah.
You know, and it probably came with an aioli to dip the fries in.
Yeah. Well, fries and a fish. Yeah, most people in this country eat French fries with ketchup, obviously. We affectionately call ketchup sauce American, you know. But, different kind of aiolis with French fries. Turns out it's pretty good, you know.
Well, Tom, you gave me the finger, but that was to tell me that there was 1 minute left.
Yes.
But I'm going to say bon voyage.
I guess
you're going to take some time off. We're still going to try to get a show in next week, fans. We're hoping for some interesting content.
Yeah, well, I'll be on a plane in about an hour, so hopefully we'll be out of here and having some fun. Anyway, we're going to end with Tom's three keys to life. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last. Keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And keep that swing plane flat.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.